Hi, this is Keith Wooden, and welcome to Story Mosaics. Can I tell you, this has been an unbelievable last 3 weeks as we've had several guests on that have really lit it up with your responses to us. The two that I really want to highlight are the last two that we did with Uncommon Moms. We did one with a person who talked about her adoption of her two children. And then we talked with Becky last week, and Becky told us about her fostering and then what turned into an adoption and how that has led them through some times emotionally, spiritually, physically. And we are just seeing so many good things taking place through Story Mosaics. And today we have an opportunity to visit with a person that we've had on before. And actually, this is the first time we've had a guest on the program twice. And so we're very excited to have Denise. But Denise is a storyteller by nature. And so we're very excited to have her with us. Welcome, Denise. Good to have you with us today.
I am so thankful to be here again. What a blessing.
Yes. And can I tell you what was fun, Denise, is you were concerned about doing this from your home. First of all, I love the backdrop from your home. And one of the things we're doing with Denise is kind of interesting is we're going to split our time here today. We're going to let Denise tell a story because that's what Story Mosaics is all about. And Denise is a pretty seasoned, when I say pretty seasoned, that was an understatement. Denise is a seasoned storyteller and a story author. And that's one of the reasons why we're having her today is because she has written several books that relate to stories in her life. She and her sister wrote a very large book that just is filled with stories. But then she's also ripped some stories from her life that have then ended up being books. And Denise, what are some of the titles of your books that you've written so far?
Well, the one that you mentioned is it's called Heirlooms, and it's about just stories from our family. My sister has quite a rich history and is also a storyteller. We were raised by a man who was an incredible storyteller. So it just seems that as she and I both continue to age, because, you know, that just happens.
That happens.
We wanted to leave these stories behind with our family. And so we published the book originally for them. And it's been distributed to quite a few people who are either connected to our family in some kind of way, or just people who are interested in stories.
Sure. I've been one of those that was privileged to get a copy of that. And one of the things we'll make sure of is that people know where they can get a copy of that book. And we'll put that on the podcast in a bottom third and as we edit this. But there have been other books that you've published as well.
Well, there have been. And I'll tell you, one of my most favorite projects, and I don't know if I've shared any of these with you before or not, Keith. I was a high school English teacher, and I had juniors and seniors. And every year, I would make them do some primary research, which means they had to go out and do the research themselves. And they had to do an interview with somebody from an older generation and learn a skill that has not been modernized. And then at the end of the school year, I would take, it was a huge project. It took an entire grading period to do it. At the end of the year, I would take the 12 to 13 best well-written stories and we would publish them in a book called Legacy. And we did that, I think, for 9 years. And oh, they were so wonderful and rich. And then one of the neatest things about that is every year there would be 12 brand new published authors who were high school age. They launch into college or launch into life already being published and understanding the publishing process and what that's like. So the books were a lot of fun.
I love that, the legacy idea. And in fact, I'm a former history teacher. And so one of the things I used to do is have all of my students do an oral history from a family member or a significant person in their life and record those or write those down. So our hearts beat in the same way on that. But there's been one book that you wrote that I have to admit, really caught my eye with the title, but it also caught my heart as I began to read it through it. I'll let you introduce it.
Oh, thank you. The title of the book is called Dialogues with a Dead Man. And it's basically a book that I wrote in 2020, in March of 2020. And you might remember that COVID was ramping up, right? And
Yes.
my husband was on hospice during that time, not because of COVID, but something else. And it was ramping up, or he was COVID was ramping up, and he died on March the 12th. And that very same week, my school that I was teaching for shut down.
Yes.
Whole world went on quarantine, if you remember. And I was grieving the loss of my husband and
Alone.
alone by myself. And no, my sister was there for part of the time, but I just closed the doors and locked down and started writing because writing is healing. And it's a story about our marriage. And my husband was an alcoholic and he died of alcoholism. And so the book is are just memoirs from our marriage and the ups and downs, the victories, the testing times, all of those things. And it's written in story form. So
Yes.
each chapter is its own little standalone story. And I've had a lot of good response from that book of people who have either lost somebody close to them or people who have dealt with addiction issues or, been a part of that process with somebody else. And it's been a real blessing. There was a book written years ago by a gentleman named Pennebaker, and it's called Writing is Healing.
There you go.
I totally embrace that concept. And it was a beautiful way to be able to just get through the grieving process on my own.
Now, that's what I was going to say, Denise, is that memories and stories and writing those down is so healing. There is, and this has been proven, there is a connection between the pen, the paper, and our brains. And it cannot be mimicked in any other way. When you write things down, there's a connection there, and it's a healing connection. And so you hit that right on the head. And yes, the Dialogues with a Dead Man is one that it caught my eye right away. I started reading it. And when I invited you back, you said turn to page 35. And so again, I went back to page 35 and looked at the story you're going to share with us today. Can you start that story for us?
I would love to. This happened in the early 2000s. And I have to tell you, I had just been through a difficult time in my life. I'm going to set up a little bit of history and then I'm going to dive right into it. I'm a cancer survivor and I had come through 16 rounds of or 16 weeks of chemotherapy. Had 33 rounds of radiation, a couple of surgeries, and I'm still here. Praise God.
Praise God.
Yeah. And I was, but I was coming off of that, and I'm also somebody who has led quite a few mission trips to Central America, and I hadn't been able to go on a mission trip during my treatment, but I was ready to go back. I wasn't 100%, but I'm like, I'm going. I'm just going. And I was there. This happened on a mission trip. And one of the things I like to do when I take a small team, we were in the country of Belize, which is where most of my work has happened. And every time I take a team, I really like to be able to give them a feeling of what the culture is like, what
Yes.
the community is like. I mean, they're going to be working or serving or doing something, but we often take a day to just do something out of the ordinary. And this particular day was one of those days. And I was going to take this group of tough, big-hearted missionaries, about 10 of us, to the Mayan ruin called Zunantunich.
Yes.
And In Belize, it's a tiny little country, but there's about 600 Mayan ruins in the country. Now, not all of them have been archaeologically unveiled yet, but there are some that are really, really amazing. And Zunan Tunich is one of the most known ones because it was in the Mayan culture. It was kind of a ruin where often people of nobility passed through. And it also has at the very top of the main pyramid that's in the ruin, there's a series of reliefs, artistic
Nice.
reliefs, that kind of depict the Mayan calendar. And it's got a lot of reference to the placement of stars and planets and things like that. So it's been pretty popular over the years. Now, this particular ruin sits on a very high elevation in the western part of Belize, and it's in a higher altitude than part of the country. And then the largest structure, which is called El Castillo, is up high on the high part of this large plateau where the ruin is built. And then this particular structure stands about 15 stories high.
Oh, wow.
It's big. It's really big. And I always take one of the principals or teachers with our team when we go. And we went to the ruin, and we're at the bottom of it. And the principal that went with us this time, his name was David. And David is a principal of a little tiny village school, but very knowledgeable. He had been trained on Zunan Tunich because in the country of Belize, if you're going to be touring the ruin, you can only have somebody lead the tour that is qualified. And he
Oh,
was,
wow. Okay.
because they don't want the history to be wrong. They want the history to be correct. And so David was going to lead our team. And a lot of the people that were on this team were strong and athletic, and they were just eager to get to the top. And me, not so much. Suffering from my treatment. And you and
Yes.
I had a conversation before, and some of your listeners may know this. I'm a little afraid of heights. Because of a few things that have happened in my life. But I was going to do it. And I was kind of seeing this sort of as a victory march. You know, it's like, I'm going to try my best to get to the top of this thing. God, you brought me through cancer. Help me get up to the top of this ruin. And I don't think I really realized what I was getting into, but I decided I was going to do it. My friend David, he was encouraging. And a lot of our team members were starting up. Now, this pyramid is built kind of in large steps. And then you get to a place where there's almost like a sidewalk. It's a narrow sidewalk, but you can just walk normally, and it kind of zigzags up the side of this pyramid and sometimes around it. And I thought, I think I can do this. It didn't look that difficult from where I was standing. So we began. And like everything in life, it starts with a step, right? So I took my first step, and then the second, and then the next, and the next, and the next. And so it went. And I just continued to just, make my way up. I got about a third of the way up, and the incline was just steep enough that I could feel my legs were, they weren't that strong. They were a little shaky. But I was determined, so I just slowed down a little bit. A few of our team members passed by me, and I continued to walk. And my friend David kept saying, "Miss Denise, you can do this." And so I kept walking, one foot after the other, and I looked up at this huge stone structure above me. By the way, the word Zunan Tunich means stone woman or noble woman. And so I'm walking this pathway. So the facade of this thing is to my left as I'm walking up. And I can just look up and see how tall it is. I got about halfway up, and I'm telling you what, Keith, I needed a break. And I saw a place where there was like a little stone ledge, and I thought, it's not going to hurt anything for me to just sit down for a minute. So I sat down, I took a deep breath, and then I did something I shouldn't have
You
done.
shouldn't have done this. Oh,
I looked down.
I know, I know. I knew you were going to say that.
Why did I do that? I knew better. All this time I'd been looking up and looking forward, and I was following my teammates, and I thought, if they can do it, I can do it. I looked down. No. And when I did that, my heart just started racing, and I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. And about that time, here comes David, and he said, "Why are you sitting?" And I said, I'm just catching my breath." And he said, "Did you look down?" And I did. He said, "No. You get up and you begin to walk. You can do this." I'm like, "Okay." I got up and I continued to walk. But now I need to tell you something. About halfway up this thing, that sidewalk started to narrow.
Yes.
And when did that, you know how when you're out walking on a sidewalk, you're just swinging your arms and you're taking a regular step. Now it's narrow enough that I have to place one foot kind of in front of the other. I can't walk my normal stride. Okay, that's all right. I placed my hand on the stone and I just kind of let be a guide. There's nothing over here on my right. And I'm just walking. And do you know, it started to rain.
Oh no.
Now it was just sprinkling in the beginning, but stone a lot of times has just a little thin layer of moss. And when we started out, I kind of liked it because it was sort of cushiony under my tennis shoes, and I thought, this is okay. But as it was getting kind of wet, it began to get kind of slippery. And I thought, okay, I don't like this. And I kept moving. I was moving slower, but I kept moving. And my friend David was now just right in front of me. And I said, "David, this is a little frightening." And he said, "You know what? Turn sideways and face the stone wall." And I said, "Okay." And he said, "Then you can get your hands in the crevices and that'll make you feel more secure." And I said, "Okay. All right." So I did. I turned sideways and I'm clinging on to the crevices and I'm moving along, and I'm moving my feet in a sidestep kind of motion. Can you picture this?
Yes, uncomfortably, so I can picture this.
But the good news is I was getting higher and higher and closer to the summit. But honestly, the higher I got, the harder it rained. And pretty soon I was just really feeling that my clothes were wet. Again, it was just slippery. The ledge had narrowed to about the width of my tennis shoes, and I'm walking sideways, but I'm holding on. And we were getting so close to the top, but I just froze.
Yep.
I move. And I'm clinging. I was frozen in these circumstances. And it made me think, okay, I've spent the last year being kind of frozen in some circumstances,
That's
but now
right.
I'm to the side of this stupid big ruin. What am I doing here? And I'm just clinging to it. And I turned my head to the left, and none of my team members were there. But David was to my right, so I turned my head to the right. He was gone. Just standing there, hanging on. And I'm like, "Where is everybody? Hello?" I didn't hear anything. And I screamed, "David, where are you?" And I listened. The rain is pounding now really hard on my back. I can feel like the indentations from the rain. This was like if you've ever been in a tropical rainstorm.
That's right.
Not a lot of space between the raindrops. It was just pouring down. And I hear above the roar of the rain, I hear David said, "Put your arm in the air." And I'm like, "What?" And he said, "Raise up your arm." And I didn't want to let go. I was clinging on to this thing. And he said, "Raise your arm." And I raised my arm. I'm hanging on with one. And the next thing I knew, he had grabbed a hold of my wrist.
Oh my goodness.
My hand. He was above me. And he literally pulled me straight up in the air. And I landed on a flat surface inside of a stone-walled room. Now, the ceiling, the back wall, the two sides, and the floor were pitch black with soot. And I'm like, "Where am I? What is this, David?" And he said, "Well, this is one of the rooms that the king had." And I'm like, "It looks like it's charred and burned." And he said, "It is." And I'm like, "I don't want to be here." And he said, "Yes, you do." And I'm like, "No, I don't." And he said, "Denise, trust me." I'm like, "Okay." So far, he'd gotten me this far.
That's right.
Now I can hear thunder. And I know there's lightning because I'm seeing flashes behind me. And he put his hands on my shoulders and he turned me around. And Keith, that whole other side of this room was wide open. And I could see off the side of this ruin. And I saw the most spectacular thing I think I've ever seen in my life. The storm, we were so high, the storm was actually below me. Can you imagine?
Wow.
Straight out in front of me, David said, "You see that jungle, the ridge of that jungle over there?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Denise, that's Guatemala. You are seeing all the way to Guatemala from here." And I'm like, "You are kidding me." And he said, "No." But the most beautiful thing of all, Keith, I lifted my eyes up and the sky above was bright blue. It was crystal coloring. It was so beautiful. That blue sky, that green ridge of Guatemala in front of me, and this thunder and lightning and storm going on below me. You know, I just needed a change of perspective, and he got
Oh,
me.
yeah.
And you know, I think about the psalmist David, and I think it's in Psalm 121, and he says, you know, sometimes you have to look up to find our strength, right? And I felt like I had been given an opportunity to look up. I felt completely refreshed inside. I mean, I didn't know how I was going to get down off this thing, but I was seeing one of the most spectacular things I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that's right.
It was just such a lesson to me that, and I know some of your listeners probably feel this way. I know you've probably been through times when all you can do is think about what's right in front of you. What is that stone wall in front of you? What is this rain pouring down on top of you? What is this cancer you've been walking through? What is this relationship you've been struggling with? What is it? But if we're just focused inwardly, don't we miss something
Yeah.
big when all we have to do is change our perspective?
You know, Denise, as you were talking through that story, one of the things that captured me is that just what you've drawn the conclusions to or the analogies to, but you know what, as you climb that area, I think every listener started to identify their moments in the analogies of what you were experiencing. And they started to grab a hold of their issues. You know, you gave several, but you know, every one of us is so different. And Denise, just like you and I said at the beginning, one of the most powerful things we highlighted at the beginning was this, is that as each one of us has our stories, and here you were, when you were writing this down, you were at one of those moments where you needed to record this memory in your processing of COVID, the loss of your husband, all of these things. And God is so faithful in helping us process these moments. And each one of those moments that are ticked off in this story are moments that people can grab a hold of for their own life. Denise, that must have been an amazing, amazing, amazing adventure. Belize is one of my favorite countries. And though I've not been to that particular area, I know the Mayan ruins fairly intimately because I am afraid of heights as well, and I would not have gone up that high. I would have kept my feet on terra firma there. So, hey, Denise, I promised the people that we'd do something a little bit different here as well, because you turned the corner so well, and we're going to let the folks kind of digest the story. But you know what? You have self-published several books, and you know what? As we've talked about this, and as you've given them maybe the impetus or the idea that maybe I can record this and maybe others would benefit from it, they might be having some of these ideas of, maybe I could self-publish as well. And so, would you mind if we did just, I'm calling some of the things up that we worked on here. But would you mind if we just kind of talked through a little bit of the self-publishing format for people? We're
Love
gonna,
that.
yeah, we're gonna keep this brief, but and so, but I think it's an important moment for us to share this. I'm gonna ask the most obvious question is, why would I self-publish a book rather than getting somebody to publish the book? What would you
That's a
say to them?
good question. That's a good question. And I struggled with it myself, quite honestly. But the process for, finding an agent and finding a publisher and being accepted and having a manuscript that they feel that they can market, those are all things that are available in the industry, but they're very time consuming and it takes a lot of persistence. And I'm a persistent person, but sometimes I'm a little anxious too. I want to get things done. And the book that we talked about regarding my husband and I, the Dialogues with the Dead Man, that book, I needed to see it in print. I needed to be
Yes.
able to hold it in my own hand. And I at the time I felt like I was maybe just writing it for myself. And later, I have some friends who are also engaged in recovery of different kinds, and they said, "Oh, wow, I'd really like to read that book." And so I felt a need to publish.
Sure.
And I looked into self-publishing and I thought, is it technically, is there too much technology for me to figure this out? And what about, like, how do people get it? And then I found out self-publishing is just not that difficult.
It's very easy. And I will tell you, having done some self-publishing myself, that and I've also had the whole process of having an agent and a publisher and things like that. The pathway into publication with an agent and a publisher is gets so narrow, and it can take whereas I can self-publish a book in a fairly short period of time, it took 3 years start to finish. For me, not for the writing, just from the publishing point of view, 3 years for that book to get published. And I will also tell you that the type of book that I was publishing at that point with the publisher, there had been no one who had written a book about that topic in since 1956. Okay. It was years ago. And by the time my book made it through the process, there were three books published in the same month on the topic that I was writing about. And so it actually would have been much more beneficial for me to get the information out there early. So, yeah, I think you're on to the right track in helping people understand that it's not as hard as maybe they've made it, and there's an opportunity. Can you just tick off maybe a couple of the self-publishing tools or organizations that help you self-publish?
Well, the one that I am really familiar with is KDP, which is through Amazon. And I liked it and I've used it a lot. When I had my students doing publications, I engaged them in this process because I wanted them to see how simple it was. And it was friendly even to a high school student.
Yeah.
And the other thing is with KDP is that then it is kind of marketed and distributed straight out through Amazon. And, you know, almost everybody in the world has an Amazon account. So, you know, a lot of times, and there are opportunities for me. One of the things I really loved about KDP is that if I needed to make a change to something, it was easy for me to go in and make edits, or changes, or revision and get it right back out there again. The pricing, there's guidelines for pricing. That, you know, it's barcoded. So that's good. Which I believe means that it's registered with the Library of Congress. Is that
That's
correct?
Correct. It's registered with the Library of Congress, and that's a pretty significant tool of the process there. KDP stands for Kindle Direct Publishing, and so that's, you know, the very name lets you know that it's also associated with the Kindle market as well. And there's means by which you can utilize that today to have your publication out on a, as a Kindle book very quickly also. So man, there's just so many, and boy, you can keep it cheap that way. You know, there's so many organizations, and I'm going to issue a warning here for those of you who are thinking about publishing is there are a lot of organizations that will take several thousand dollars of your money and they will give you a product. But the problem is it's become so expensive that then you regret having ever started it. Whereas KDP is a free process, except for a few nominal expenses. It's a free process for you to get your work out there, and then you decide how to market it and that kind of thing. What's your greatest, the greatest positive and the greatest regret in that part of the process?
Well, let's see. I think the regret, if there is one, is that I had a lot of self-doubt. Just, you know, and
there you go. Thank you.
I know better. I mean, I always think, well, you know, I've even said this to you before. You know, I'm not a technological genius, so I need things to be simple. But the good thing, one of the highlights of, for example, the KDP product was that there are templates in place. Several of the books, what I think I've shared with you, a book that I wrote that's almost in a coloring book format.
Yes.
Wider, it's narrower, and it's, you know, it bleeds out to the margins sometimes and different things like that. So simple. There, you just pick a template that works for you and drop your material into it. It was just, I can design my own cover. I love those things. And I think, the other thing that I love the most that, for example, if I'm going to be speaking somewhere, occasionally people will say, Denise, please bring some of your books along. And so what I'll do is I can go on and I can order author copies, and my copies are at a reduced rate, which is a blessing. And I can order a bulk amount of them and have them delivered quickly to my home, and I can be ready, and they're already marked with the retail price. So I, you know, I can sell them at the retail price. But I can also just, people can just go directly to Amazon and buy my books there. And a lot of times I'll just have a card that'll have a link to the book that I'm promoting at that particular time. And it's just so simple. It's
it
so
really is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing this little pitch, if you will, not because it's doing anything for you or for me. I want more people to have an opportunity to get their stories out there in different formats. Of course, we have story mosaics, and I want to hear your stories, but I may also come back to listeners and authors and storytellers and tell them, you need to get this in written form, or you need to put a collection together. And especially, I hear a lot of people who want to write children's books, and it would seemingly, you would think that it would be easier to get a children's book published than it would in a publisher's market as, than it would for a full-fledged novel. But actually the opposite is true. Children's books are, and publishers are inundated with submissions. This is the best way to get your story out. And you know what? I'm just going to put it on the bottom level. If you sell a certain number of your books, whether it's to friends, family, and your market that you have, if you sell over 1,000 books or even 2,000 books, you will start to get the awakening of the publishing industry. If a book sells 10,000 books, a publisher says that's very successful in the markets today. And so if you're selling a couple of thousand, you're on your way to doing a great job in marketing your book. So, hey, Denise, I want to thank you so much for being with us today and just the opportunity. And I'm glad we just did this little tag element here. And boy, I'll tell you, it's so good working with a teacher. Your mind and my mind work exactly the same way. And so when you start teaching in your teaching mode, it's very easy for me to understand. I also want to tell you now, this particular podcast is going to drop today because we're one day behind. And I know some of you are really frustrated with me right now because you listen to the podcast on Tuesdays, and for 2 weeks now we've had a delay on them. We're going to be back on cue. Sometimes it's difficult to get our guests with us on specific dates, and Denise was so willing to be join us today. But we'll be back on the Tuesdays, and tomorrow or next week rather, we have a very unique opportunity in that we have a couple of individuals, David Alford and Joseph Stamm, who created the movie Searching for the Elephant. David and Joseph have done a great job of putting this together, and they're going to join us next week as I interview them and we talk. And David said, "Oh, I've got a story to tell as well." And so we're looking forward to that. And we want to thank you for joining us on Story Mosaics today. And in fact, so many of you are faithful listeners. Can you do me a favor though? If you're listening to this, could you like, follow, and subscribe? You know what? The more that takes place, the greater help it is in reaching more and more people with the stories, and for people to hear this simple idea that everyone has a story. And Story Mosaics just wants you to help you tell your story better. So thank you for joining us today on Story Mosaics.